Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normanton.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, well, give praise and dwell in the goodness. Those are the words of St. Paul. He wants us to think about God's work in the world. And here on Call Me Catholic, we like to talk about his work in the world, too. I am Peggy Normanton, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour that is intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times so we can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh, yeah, you can call me Catholic. You all know my partner in crime, Jimmy G., engineer and chief fact checker for Team Call Me Catholic.
I am eager to affirm this morning.
Hey, you know what I wanted to mention and I haven't asked you about is the impending arrival of your grandchild, your very first grandchild.
That's right. That's right. It's supposed to happen in May.
I don't
have the exact date, but yeah, my son, James. I do know it's going to be a little girl and her name will be Joy.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did not know that. Yeah. So you've got a girl now.
Joy to the world.
Joy to the world. Oh, that's so sweet. Well, my heart is full of happiness for you, Jimmy G.
It's exciting.
Very big, rich new dimension in your life.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, a rich new dimension on our show is the fact that you can go to our Facebook page and watch us. If you have a computer nearby, not if you're driving, of course, but if you're at home watching this and you want to go, or you have your phone with you, maybe. I think you can do it on a smartphone.
Or maybe you have one of those cars with the screens that hang down for the kids to watch. They could watch the show.
Get in the back seat and watch it. No, you go to our Facebook page. So that's facebook.com/callmecatholic. And right there, it'll pop up. You don't have to go any place else. It'll be a live stream of the show. You'll see us here in the studio.
That's right.
And you can make comments on there if you'd like. Matt, our call screener and technical advisor, will sort of relay any interesting questions that you'd like us to address on the show. And so join the family and get on board our Facebook page.
I think today is the day we're going to cross over the 2,000 threshold because we were at 1,991 likes.
Well, we have even more followers.
That's right.
So I don't know what the distinction between liking us and following us is.
Maybe one of our callers could answer that because I'm not sure either.
Either way, we're just glad to have you in the fold, okay? Hey, now what you can see there on the Facebook stream is that we have a little cozy studio here, but what you can't see is that we're coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the beautiful Christ Cathedral campus, and you can just feel like you're part of our studio audience there. It's a beautiful view, and I wish we could share it with you, but we can see Angel Stadium, Disneyland, all the great landmarks in our area. So here we are in March already. How did that happen?
Yeah, I know, huh?
Wow. March is kind of a fun month, though. And even though we're in Lent and it's lousy weather in a lot of places, the dregs of winter, apologies and condolences to all those people in the Northeast who got hammered with that recent storm. Mm. You know, they call March the frozen food month. It is National Frozen Food Month.
Ah.
But there are some more notable things that we celebrate in March. So daylight saving is March 11. We'll get an extra day of sunlight.
Next weekend.
St. Patrick's Day is March 17th. I don't have to tell ya.
St. Patty's Day.
Yeah. We'll be broadcasting live from the LA Congress.
That's
on
right.
March 17th.
That's
so
right.
Wear your green, Jimmy G. And then St. Joseph's Day, my personal patron, is March 19th. I always associate St. Joseph in March. And then the first day of spring is March 20th, the spring equinox, when the sun is directly above the equator. That means we have equal amount of light and darkness on the equinox.
Nice.
Okay. And then the last week of the month is Holy Week, the holiest week of our calendar, but it leads right up to Easter, which introduces a new month, April 1st.
That's right. That's
so
right.
March is going to go whiz by. And if you're local here to Southern California, I can tell you about one more really cool thing that's going on this month. This Thursday, March 8th, Father Ho Lung with the Missionaries of the Poor will be in town with his 5 Jamaican tenors. And they, I think Father Ho Lung actually has a Lenten series on EWTN television. So maybe you're familiar with him with that. And he travels around with his 5 Jamaican tenors to raise money for the Missionaries of the Poor, who do such incredible and important work serving the poor in the Caribbean.
Right.
Very unique location, very unique region. And if you would like to purchase a ticket to this fabulous concert, it's an evening of very, very spirited music here on Christ Cathedral campus, you can go to this website, 5tenors, spell out 5, 5tenors.eventbrite.com. There's lots of tickets. You probably can show up that night and get a ticket at the door, too. So it will be terrific. Music to stir your soul. Our guest today might also stir your soul. Coming up in a minute is popular Catholic evangelist and author Kathleen Beckman. We're going to talk about Kathleen's latest book, When Women Pray, an excellent collection of essays on the merits and qualities of feminine spirituality. But don't let that scare the men in the audience away, because we're also going to discuss her work with the Pope Leo XIII Institute, where she helps train and prepare priests for a ministry in exorcism. And she also often accompanies them on those perilous house calls. So who else knows where our conversation may take us? Kathleen is a very prolific and gifted author and speaker and conversationalist. So I'm looking forward to that. And then at the end of the show, in our Chatting with Catholics segment, I talked to some fourth graders from St. Joachim Elementary School here in the Diocese of Orange. And I asked them what they think is the hardest commandment to follow. Which, now, tomorrow is the third Sunday in Lent. And we are going to, in the first reading, we are going to hear the account of when God gave Moses the 10 laws of his land through the 10 commandments on the two stone tablets. So I thought it was a good time to ask these kids in preparation for their going to Mass and hearing that. What do they think is the hardest commandment to follow? Mm. And we got some pretty cute answers.
Yes.
But first up, it's our Call Me Catholic Countdown, which this week, because we all have Lent on our mind and have in many cases made some dietary adjustments for the season, living and eating a little leaner, I'm going to list the top five most unusual foods of Lent. Now, since Lent was adopted as an official liturgical season back in the 4th century, food has always been kind of a part of the penitential practices. And out of that, some peculiar and interesting culinary creations have evolved. Jimmy G, you're looking with wide-eyed, like, don't go there, Peggy.
I'm just curious to know what kind of toppings they had on their pizza back in the Old Testament days.
Oh, they put feta cheese, olives, I'm sure. Probably a few anchovies.
Mushrooms?
Hold the anchovies on mine, please. Okay, so here we go. These are my top five unusual foods of the Lenten season. Bum, bum.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
Rightio. Okay, so number five, and you might be familiar with this one, are pretzels. Now, pretzels, are really supposed to be crossed arms in prayer, inspired by a position of prayer that was popular during the early medieval monastics, but when they prayed by crossing both of their arms over their chest. So, and the Latin word for arms is brachle, and that became the German Brezel, and in time, then the English pretzel. So the pretzel contains no eggs, no butter or milk, so it's considered, part of the official Lenten diet.
Interesting.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So have yourself a pretzel while you go to
the movies.
Let me
write that down.
Okay. Okay. Number four would be something called Rockbier, or smoke beer. And it's made using malts that have been dried over fire. So it gains the smoky taste of cured meats like ham and bacon without having any meat in them. So in medieval Bavaria, beers of this type became associated with Lent because it replaced the meats that everybody were missing. It evoked that sort of smoky flavor and fragrance of the meats. Okay. Rock beer. Okay.
The things you learn listening to Call Me Catholic.
That's
goodness
right.
Gracious.
Number three would be, now this is a good one, the muskrat. Okay, now, Catholics living in Detroit know what I'm talking about. They enjoy a very long-standing informal dispensation to eat muskrat on Fridays during Lent. It dates back to missionary times when there was a French-Canadian trapper, priest, missionary who was working in the area, and he didn't want the people in his flock to starve, so he said, you can definitely eat muskrat. Muskrat's kind of a rodent. And it kind of comes out of the water anyway, so it's sort
of hungry now.
Are you salivating out there, friends?
Oh, yeah.
So the bishop of Detroit described the practice as being an immemorial custom and said that anyone who could eat muskrat was doing penance worthy of the greatest saints.
Okay.
So yum yum, enjoy your muskrat, all you Detroit. But you can't eat it in Southern California on Fridays. No, no, no. It's a delicacy. Okay, number two would be hot cross buns. Now, this is a sweet, spiced bun made with currants or raisins inside. And the hot cross bun is traditionally eaten on Good Fridays. Mm. There's a cross kind of etched over the bun.
Right, right.
And that's supposed to represent Christ's cross and then Christ's death. And then the spices inside, it's got a lot of unique spices, are supposed to evoke his entombment.
Interesting. Okay.
So have yourself a hot cross bun on
Go to your local bakery and order one, right?
Okay. And my number one most unusual and memorable food of Lent is Nani's tuna casserole. Now, this is my grandmother's tuna casserole that goes back to Depression era recipes, I think.
Can you Google that, Nani's?
I think I listed it once on our Facebook page. And some people came back and said, it's not the most delicious thing I've ever had because it has cottage cheese. and eggs and tuna, and it's made kind of like a souffle. Huh. So it doesn't take, it doesn't have very expensive ingredients. It has just a little bit of substance. So it was a good dietary Friday diet dinner thing that we grew up on, and my mother grew up on it with my grandmother too. So everybody's got some family tuna casserole. I'm sure you do too.
Yeah, as a kid. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe you out there listeners have some weird or wonderful food traditions that are born out of our Lenten practices. You can share them with us on our Facebook page. And while you're at it, you can watch us too. And you can give us a like or a follow. We will be right back with Catholic author and evangelist Kathleen Beckman. Lots more to come on our show today. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Helping you navigate the daily struggles and blessings of life. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Call Me Catholic on this third Saturday of Lent. I am your host, Peggy Normandin. And, you know, here on Call Me Catholic, we like to have conversations about our faith. We're not teaching theology here. We're hoping to encourage and inspire and explore subjects that have value to you as Catholics. And toward that end, I try to invite guests who can guide us in that kind of dialogue, and boy, do we have one today. A lot of you listeners may already know Kathleen Beckman. She's a frequent visitor to EWTN programs because of her impressive Catholic pedigree. Kathleen Beckman has written some excellent books, led retreats around the world, speaks at many national Catholic conferences, all about her passion for the faith. She is the president and co-founder of the Foundation of Prayer for Priests, which is an international Eucharistic apostolate of prayer and catechesis for the holiness of priests. And she serves in the Pope Leo XIII Institute, where she helps train our clergy for ministry in exorcism. And she has witnessed much through that work. Kathleen Beckman, welcome to Call Me Catholic. You are the consummate Catholic evangelist.
Thank you, Peggy. I'm delighted to be here with you.
And you're really always out there, Kathleen. So I've got to ask you, was there a moment, kind of like we know that Jesus' public ministry began at Cana, the wedding feast at Cana. Was there a moment in your life where you decided to take your faith on the road and make it very, very public?
I never made that decision. The Lord made it for me.
Good answer.
I would say that, you know, the Lord in his perfect timing waited until we were empty nesters, because I didn't travel much when our kids were at home, but we've been empty nesters for a number of years now. They're adult. Our sons are adults. So, that is when he called me forward. It's basically through the books, and through Magnificat, a ministry to Catholic women I've been involved with since 1991. And which has been a blessing. So
what was the very first thing you did where you said, because that's a very vulnerable position to be in, where you live your faith out and then you decide, I'm going to be public. I'm going to be an evangelist. I'm going to write about it, or I'm going to speak about it, or I'm going to lead people in discovery about it. What was the very first step you took?
Well, I think it was just responding to the call of the Lord. I felt prompted to write a book, Rekindle Eucharistic Amazement, to thank him. I was thanking him for the grace of my conversion, because I had a very profound, deep conversion through the Eucharist when I was in Lourdes in my mid-30s. And it just set my heart on fire. And I wrote the book. It was based on Ecclesia Dei Eucharistia, St. John Paul II's encyclical on the Eucharist. And I just devoured that and studied it. So then I also began to take courses for more formation, became an Ignatian, certified retreat director, and was mentored by a lot of priests. And you know, I was just responding to the Lord's prompting each step of the way. You know, it was not my idea.
What was the experience at Lourdes? Was it the candlelight procession? Was it a moment at the grotto? Or was it just?
It was everything about Lourdes, but the Lord really gave me a experience of where I was at that time, and in a way, it's hard to articulate those spiritual experiences. But it was an experience of, I was really on the fence. I had one leg very much in the world, and had bought into the trappings of materialism here in Orange County, and kind of was barely living, you know, the spiritual life at all. My prayer life was very sad, and so it was just everything. The beauty of Lourdes captured my heart. I was drawn there by Mary, and then it was just the reality of, what the state of my soul is, really what he showed me. And then those Eucharistic processions for the healing. And I realized that the Eucharist is Jesus Christ, and the power of the Eucharist and the presence that came home became a daily communicant and daily, and go to daily adoration. And that changed my life.
If you would like to join this really interesting and very moving conversation with Kathleen Beckman, give us a call. We've got our call screener, Marvelous Matt, ready to take your call, and he'll punch you right into our conversation. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. Or you can join us on Facebook. Watch us on Facebook and post a, it's got a live stream of the show going on right now, and you can post a comment there. So Kathleen, you mentioned the challenge of articulating a spiritual experience or an interior spiritual disposition. So I think this is a good time to introduce to our listeners the book that you most recently came out with, which is When Women Pray. And it is so beautiful. And you feature 11 women who take the time to sort of articulate in their own words and in their own style a prayer experience or their a spiritual moving of the soul that they as a woman experienced. And they did such a good job, each woman. And each one has such a different style and a different experience and a different personality.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm so delighted that the 11 women agreed to write a chapter in the book. And the whole point of it, I was inspired during Eucharistic Adoration with the scripture from Matthew 1 about the 10 virgins, the 5 wise and the 5 foolish. And I began to contemplate the whole history of the church, of like the whole army of praying women, you know, the whole army of saints. And so I put together a proposal to the wonderful publisher, Sophia Press. He loved the idea. And then I really stepped out in faith and asking the most busy women in the Catholic Church with big
high-profile women. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, can you write 3,000 words for this book? They all said yes. And
so there were some EWTN personalities, yes, included Joan Lewis, who, yes, is our Vatican correspondent, Jeanette Bankovic. Everyone,
right,
knows Jeanette.
Yes.
Yeah. I loved one thing that stuck out that Joan Lewis wrote about, because she had a very folksy way of talking about it. And she has a very lofty job in working with the Vatican and with the Vatican News Corps there. But she said when she was a kid, she grew up Catholic, and she remembers that you'd all sit in front of the TV and watch Fulton Sheen. And she said it all made us all really proud to be Catholic. It was such a cute domestic sort of experience there.
I know. I really, every chapter was a surprise to me. When they would submit it to me, I was always like, it was new, because I did not direct them. And so on what they were to write, it was up to them. I trust the Holy Spirit working through these women. You know, I knew and respected them. And the whole point was, Peggy, was that, you know, there's people who have very public places in the church, but the foundation is a very hidden foundation of prayer. And that's what I tried to bring out in the book.
Well, there were several references to the fact that the soul, a man's soul and a woman's soul, is sort of intrinsically female. Now, how do you think men would feel about that?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure that they would be totally comfortable with that, but it really is the teaching of the church and the theologians. You know, we have a couple, like 3 doctorates of theology in the book. And
can you explain that, though, for our listeners? What does that mean, that the soul is basically feminine?
Because the church is bride. Jesus is the head of the body. And so the church is bride, so that there's that feminine response to the groom, who's the head of the church. And because there's that mystical, this is mystical language, it's mystical marriage, if you will, and that beautiful agape love. And so Jesus is the head and the bride, the church. So all church, male and female, have that position of being in that posture.
Yeah, then our own resident luminary, Dr. Pia Desalegni, yes, was also a contributor to this wonderful collection. And she kind of explored the aspect of the Mary Martha feminine spirituality. You've got the active, you've got the contemplative, and how really they're very complementary.
Absolutely. I mean, one is foundational. You know, we cannot give and be active that which we don't receive by being contemplative and sitting at the foot of the master.
Yeah. Hey, we have a caller from New York. Hello, Kathy. You're listening to us on EWTN app or on the EWTN website.
Yes, hello. I wanted to call in and share about an experience I had when, this was several years ago already, but it's something you cannot forget, because you know where you're from, you know where you're going, you know who your God is, especially when you experience what I did. It was a Tuesday at our church where they have adoration that day, and I prayed the rosary with them each day. It was kind of new to me for a few years, and I didn't need that little paper pamphlet anymore because I had it memorized. And they were doing the sulfur mysteries on Tuesday, and on the third sulfur mystery, where Jesus is crowned with thorns, they announced, normally the crowning with thorns. Well, the woman who randomly jumped in to lead that decade, she said something such as, "Our Lord Jesus crowned with thorns," something like that. My head was down, my eyes were closed. I really feel called to, like, focus and really pay attention to the mystery I'm on and try to be there in that stage of the Lord's life, whatever's going on. And I had also, I want to make mention, I wanted to sit in the back that day to really focus, and they had adoration. They had the Eucharist. I was in line with the Eucharist, but the people mostly were up there by the Eucharist, kneeling, sitting, whatever, and I was in the back by myself because I wanted to pray with them but yet be alone. And on the third sulfur mystery, when she said, "Jesus, crowned with thorns," on his name, my head was down, my eyes were closed, light shot into me somehow. I saw it in my eyes were closed, and it was a split second, like lightning speed. And at the same moment, instant, there was this huge aroma of roses toward my right upper corner of myself. And that lingered, but the very first thing I did was lift up my head and open my eyes to see. Everything was as it was, but yet, when my eyes were closed and my head was down, holy, majestic, powerful, glorious, pure, oh, it was the presence. This light wasn't just any light. It was the presence in me and around me. I was encompassed in it for that lightning speed split second. It was so quick. Three reflections over time were that I believe I would have been gone if it had lasted any longer. It was just so powerful beyond words. Also, I was kneeling on a kneeler. I knew I wanted to be down lower. I'm telling you, all the way down. And it's kind of humorous. How could I have gotten lower? The bench is in front of me. There's no way to do that. Right. I thought about it later, you know. Like, and then the third thing is, no wonder why he's in such a small, simple form. Because this, if we saw this huge majesty and glory and beauty and might of our Lord, we could never go up the aisle and get him. But he wants us more than we want him. And so,
well, that was a beautiful moment that actually informed you too. It really enriched your understanding of Christ's passion and of his presence in the Eucharist. So it wasn't just a moment. It was actually an illumination, really, Kathy. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me share it. I felt I needed to share this with the world. They all need to know. If heaven begins now, that was heaven.
Yeah.
God is heaven. Jesus is God. God is heaven. Jesus is heaven. It's in that Eucharist. It begins now.
And that has endured with you, right, Kathy? It sounds like it's still as alive now as it was at that moment.
And every time I share it with anybody I can share it with when it comes up, I feel called to do that. It just reinvigorates me and makes me so joyful. It's incredible.
Well, beautiful. Well, thank you. Thank you, Kathy, for calling in. We really appreciate your sharing that very, very personal and intimate experience. And stay warm back there in New York.
Thanks. Thank you.
Hey, so Kathleen, do you think women and men experience their faith very, very differently? You know, I it's interesting. I don't know whether you would have this kind of a collection. In fact, Kathy's testimony could probably go right in there with your other 11 women. It was very powerful. But do men articulate it? Do they experience it in the same way? I mean, in exploring this with these women, did you come up with a distinction between men and women?
Well, I think Dr. Pia De Seleni addressed that a little bit. Rhonda Shervin did in the distinctions between the feminine and male soul, if you will. And I've asked priests because, you know, if you read, I've read a lot of the women saints, of the mystics, and so their attitude is one of bride of Christ, you know, that espousal. Women are very comfortable with that. So I would ask several priests, how are you with that? And they're like, well, my relationship with God is more like he's my king, he's my my leader, you know, he's the, so it's but there are definite distinctions.
Has authority.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting thing to explore. I think women in their very nature like to talk about it more than men. I mean, I think they like to sit there and say, yes, I want to share this experience with you. I want to tell you about it. And maybe you'd like to talk to us and share your experiences with us. So jump into the conversation like Kathy did. Give us a call at 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. We are going to be right back to continue this conversation with author and evangelist Kathleen Beckman. If you have a question, jump in. Marvelous Matt is right over there ready to punch you up. And I know He's not going to punch you out. He's going to punch you up into the studio here. So give us a call again, 714-282-6034. Now, when we come back, I want to ask Kathleen about her work with the Pope Leo XIII Institute, where she helps train and work with priests and other clergy who are preparing to work in the ministry of exorcism. I think that should be very, very interesting, very riveting, and she has some personal experience of having attended these exorcisms. So I have a lot to ask her about that. I am Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, kids of all ages. Thanks for tuning in to Call Me Catholic today. I am Peggy Normandin. And I am with a very popular and respected Catholic personality. Kathleen Beckman is an author, speaker, retreat leader. Her work in our church has been a beacon of inspiration. She is the author of When Women Pray, a very popular contemporary book on feminine spirituality that we've been discussing. And she also wrote Praying for Priests, A Mission for the New Evangelization. You've met her through any number of EWTN shows because Kathleen is a much sought-after guest. And today she's all mine. She's all ours, Jimmy G. Kathleen, let me ask you about this work with, because I don't want to end the show and not having had the opportunity to address it. The Pope Leo XIII Institute is devoted to help train priests for the ministry of exorcism.
Correct.
How did that get established and how did you get involved in that?
You know, the foundress is Dr. Margaret Schlintz, and she started maybe 15 years ago with an annual conference hosted at Mundelein Seminary, and she saw the need to address that the clergy needed formation in spiritual warfare, particularly exorcism and deliverance ministry, rather than it coming up through the laity. That's because the clergy aren't trained in these ministries during seminary formation.
No.
So most of
it's kind of a specialization.
Yeah. So, you know, think about it. Think of the priest, the bishop calls him in and, you know, he's designated as the mandated exorcist. Okay. So where is he going to train? Margaret saw the void there and she contacted several bishops, and they encouraged her to start this Pope Leo XIII Institute, which would be for the formation of priests who have been designated to be the mandated exorcist. And she's the one that called me into it.
Is it just in the United States?
Yes, it's okay. In the United States, although there have been inquiries to take it internationally. But there's also, they work in tandem with the International Association of Exorcists, and I've taken the course at the Regina Apostolorum University in Rome. And the course is just for the priests and those who are designated by the local ordinary to work with the priests in this ministry, and that's the designation Bishop Van has given me.
So what qualified you for this unique line of work?
Well, Margaret had a lot of formation classes for us and took the team, the original team, to begin the institute through a lot of courses with experienced exorcists like Father Gary Thomas and Father Dennis McManus and Father Rippinger and Father Ermitinger. Yes. And so there was a formation period. And basically, the priests really do the teaching. They're the professors. But I was a facilitator because we teach them by case study. So I facilitated a small group of 10 or 12 priests, read, you know, what the study is of a particular exorcism case, and, oh, how would you handle this so that they learn the formation, the way they teach in law school or medical school.
Well, what would make a bishop identify a specific priest and say, I think you are well suited to this kind of ministry? Do priests themselves come up and say, I have a calling to this? Is that something that would be protocol? No. Okay.
Most of them don't at all.
Okay.
But
it's like becoming Pope. No, you don't want to volunteer for that job.
Well, not many volunteers.
So what would identify or distinguish a priest as being particularly suited for this? Is it a holiness?
Well, I mean, rite of exorcism book, which is the major rite, which is a prayer book, basically. It's a rite. And so it does designate, it gives some guidelines to the bishops on the quality that they look for in a priest who is going to be the mandated exorcist, the quality of having a wonderful reputation for sanctity, for a prayer life, is well known for his deep prayer life and virtue, and that's who they look for.
Does every diocese and archdiocese have a designated exorcist?
No. Okay. It would be ideal if they did, right. But many more are. We've had this third cohort is at Mundelein Seminary right now, studying. So 105 have graduated, and now there's another cohort of 55.
I would think one of the most important discernments is being able to distinguish between maybe a mental illness and
Correct.
Possession. So that takes a real refined eye and intuition.
You are right on that. That's why most teams have a psychologist or psychiatrist. I always say to the clergy, because they're really advised and taught not to do this ministry on their own, but they have a team, and medical professionals are very much a part of the team, because we care for the whole person, you know, and so we can't compartmentalize that you have a certain area where there's this diabolical harassment, if you will. But also, I mean, there's this whole care of the soul, the spiritual aspect, and the psychiatric, the care of the mind and mental health.
Did it frighten you at all to get involved in this kind of work?
No, and that's why I knew. I was asked by priests and by Margaret Schlintz to do this work. I was called into it. What we teach in the Institute is if somebody's volunteering, they're probably not called to it, because most people who are in it are pulled into it. You know, they're
oh,
asked.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, the person that volunteers might be a little too eager.
That's right.
Well, it's interesting that women are involved in this, of course, because Mary has a huge presence in crushing the head of the serpent.
Absolutely.
So have you ever accompanied these priests and felt like you were standing in for Mary there at those moments?
Oh, absolutely. And she, you know, it's really been a privilege to be at, probably have been over maybe 100 rites of exorcism.
Oh, my goodness.
In many different countries, also in Poland and in Malta.
You've attended all those in different countries.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. So once there's kind of a network of the priests kind of know who have been trained. And we have a wonderful team here in the Orange Diocese of about 7 people who have been trained. Dr. Luis Sandoval took the course with me in Rome. He's on our team. And so
what is your role when you are there with the priests?
We are
That's
a great question. We are intercessors. We're intercessors. We might help them with discernment. If there are manifestations, there will be men on the team. Men and women comprise mm-hmm. the team, and the men will help restrain as necessary, because often there will be manifestation of supernatural strength. And it is really a powerful prayer session. And the only one that really, the leader and the prayer is the priest, who is the exorcist, who is sure. praying the rite. But we answer, there's litanies, like the Litany of the mm-hmm. Saints. So we are praying with and for, you know, not only the energumen, which is the term we use for the person, but also for the exorcist.
So every case is probably different. And I don't know whether it's like the sacrament of reconciliation, where you're not supposed to disclose, or once you leave the confessional, the priest has forgotten your sins. But right. do you have any experiences that you can share with us that very specific happenstance?
What I can share is, you're right, confidentiality is absolutely vital. The very intentional spiritual life is a strong armor against diabolical harassment. Now, we all deal with ordinary temptation, so we all, in a way, understand, like the book of Job mm-hmm. and the diabolical vexation that we all have with temptation. And so a life of sin, a life of habitual sin, lacking a sacramental life, kind of leaves us vulnerable, mm-hmm. and that's where the enemy will come in. Specifically, sins of the flesh, and vice of the flesh, and certain addictions are real open doors.
Gateways.
Mm-hmm, gateways.
But the really important takeaway here is the devil is real.
He's real, but you know, the more powerful is the Lord and
yes,
his
absolutely.
The two-third good angels who are there. I mean, they always recall upon the Litany of Saints, and their presence is felt in this session.
Which reminds me of one of the chapters in your book, When Women Pray, that was written by Lisa Hendy.
Yes.
And she talks about her relationship with the saints, and in a way that's so intimate that you feel like they're really her companions. And the saints are our companions.
Yes.
And we have another companion on the show with us. Debbie has called in from Pennsylvania, and she has a comment to make. Hey, Debbie, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, Peggy.
Hi.
I was so glad to hear the topic for today, and especially because I'm friends with Monsignor John Essef.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, and a number of EWTN listeners might be familiar with a poem that I wrote that has been on a couple of the shows, and it's called Beware My Son. But before I had this printed, I actually went to Monsignor Essef and asked him what he thought of it, because I didn't want to put it out there. I mean, I knew that I had received it from the Holy Spirit, but when Monsignor Essef read this poem, it's about the characteristics of Jezebel, he looked me in the eye intently, and if you've ever sat with Monsignor Essef, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because he's been an exorcist for decades. He looked me in the eye, he says, "Who is Jezebel?" And I said, "The woman who has demonic traits." And he goes, and he kept asking me. And he looks at me and he goes, "It's Satan. You have uncovered Satan."
Mm.
I was like, okay.
That's a big responsibility, Debbie.
Yeah, and so he said, you know, that, yeah, he thought that I should make this poem, you know, distribute it and make it known. But he had said to me when we were sitting down, I actually live not too far from where he lives. In fact, my spiritual director was in the same retirement home as Monsignor Essef. But he had said to me, "I want you to pray for the priests who are in the Institute." And I'll pass on what God kind of whispered into me, that when I go to Mass every day, when the priest is pouring the wine into the chalice, my prayer is, "Into this chalice I pour my works, prayers, joys, sufferings, and sorrows of this day, for the attentions of the Holy Father, and for the intentions of Monsignor Essef," which is for the Institute.
Well, good for you, Debbie. That's beautiful
that's
and
terrific.
Profound.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's one way that I can, even though I'm far from the Institute, you know, that I can still give everything of that day for the priests who are being educated for our protection. Because we live in an age when most people, like you said, so many people have forgotten the reality of Satan.
Yeah.
They think it's just a myth. And that's one of his best tactics to
you
get
bet.
Everybody to think that, oh, well, it's just made up.
He's just a fairy tale character,
right.
And that's where he sees his influence. Hey, Debbie, thank you so much. If you have a chance, you might go on our Facebook page and post your poem on Jezebel. I'd love to read it. So thanks for sharing
okay.
that.
Thank you, Debbie. Appreciate it.
No problem.
We might,
okay.
It might
have
be helpful
it.
To tell the listeners that Monsignor John Essef is the president of the Pope Leo the Institute.
Oh, okay.
So he co-founded it with Dr. Margaret Schlentz originally.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very important. She touched on a point that is another one of your spiritual passions, which is praying for our priests.
Yes, yes.
Can you tell us about that ministry, Kathleen?
Oh, I would love to.
Usually, women who pray for priests love to tell you that. I mean, it's a beautiful thing that they love to share.
You know, there's no doubt about it. I just am so glad that Debbie called and brought this up and that you are asking, Peggy, because priests are on the front lines. And whether they're the exorcist or every single priest, I guarantee you, if we feel that we're the target of the enemy, there is the foremost target of the enemy is our priests. And all of them are vulnerable and all of them are targeted in a very specific way by covens and groups like that. They target parishes, they target priests. They're on the front lines and they need our support. Priests are very human. And they are vulnerable as we are, but the attacks are super on them. And so I would invite everyone who's listening today to please visit www.foundationforpriests.org and sign up as a spiritual mother or spiritual father, foundationforpriests.org. There are priests that are from other countries, a lot of third world countries, that are waiting for spiritual adoption, missionary priests.
Can you specifically have a relationship with someone that you've adopted, a priest, through this resource, or you just sort of become spiritually connected to them?
Spiritually connected,
yeah.
Right, okay. Right. Sometimes through the foundation, we will connect, but for the most part, I would say 99% of them, there's that spiritual, that's why it's like being a hidden Saint Joseph, mm-hmm. if you're a man, and a hidden Mary, because Mary carries. I mean, Mariologist, Father Newbert said that Mary's foremost care and concern is for her priests.
Yeah. How does a person pray for a priest, Kathleen?
Well, I would say that, you know, there's many different ways, let me just say. But I think, offering up the Holy Communion for a priest, making a holy hour of adoration for a priest, praying the rosary, the chaplet of divine mercy, or the offering of suffering, Peggy, is very powerful. On the website, there's a whole section on the offering of suffering. You can see the little ways that Teresa Lisieux did it. Yeah. We have a lot of spiritual mothers and the saints.
There's a lot of models in the saints.
Yes, a lot
where
of
they
models.
They really dedicated their prayer life to the priest. I think it's a beautiful concept, Kathleen, and I think that every Catholic should adopt a priest. Hey, we have Frank from Portland, Oregon calling us this morning with a question or a comment for Kathleen. Hey, Frank, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thanks, Mom. How's it going?
This is my son.
Oh, yay!
Hey, Frankie. How are you, darling?
Hey. Hi, Kathleen. I had a quick question for you. So, super interesting topic about exorcisms, but I'm curious, what's the greatest misconception about either the duty or the responsibility of an exorcism? It's oftentimes used in pop culture so frequently. I'm curious to know.
Oh, gosh, that's a great question.
You know, I think
what we don't see.
A lot of people will think that they need an exorcism when in fact they don't. And the point is that when people get into some sort of spiritual distress, if you will, and it can be very, very painful. Usually there's psychological distress as well, and sometimes there's physical distress, and they search frantically for an exorcist thinking that they need the major rite of exorcism, when in fact what is much more powerful is a good confession and putting our spiritual life and our moral life in order according to the teachings of the church.
But I think maybe what Frank is addressing is, are some of the theatrical depictions of exorcists, are they accurate? Is that, am I right in assuming that, Frank?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, thank you. See, the mother understands the son. I missed that. Okay, thank you so much, Peggy and Frank. I would say that the Hollywood depiction is over theatrical, but the manifestation of superhuman strength is real. The rolling back of the eyes, the
projectile vomit.
Yes. Those things are very, very real.
Mm. Therefore,
wow.
I bet you're not signing up soon.
No.
But thank you. Thank you for calling.
Pray for priests.
How's your Lent going, sweetie?
Yeah, it's going well.
Good.
It's going great. How about yours?
Good. I stay well through all my great guests that I have in the studio. Hey, thanks for calling, Frank. Really appreciate it, sweetie. Good question.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
I was going to say, we're going to need 3D glasses for that projectile.
I think that exorcism is fascinating, but we do have to stay grounded in the facts of it and not the sort of sci-fi aspect of it. You know
oh,
what
absolutely.
I mean?
Yeah. Full possession is extremely rare. Extremely rare.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, listen, I just want to make a plug here for Kathleen's books again. Today we talked a lot about When Women Pray, and she has a lot of other great books. And you know where you can get them all? You can get them on the EWTN Religious Catalog. You go to EWTNRC.com. Lots of great books. Specifically, look up Kathleen Beckman. But there's also lots of great gifts for Easter, some inspirational devotions for Lent. You've got First Communion gifts, Confirmation gifts. This is a season where you really want to have some great religious gifts for people, really good appropriate ones, a book or a devotional or an accessory. So go to the religious catalog at EWTN, EWTNRC.com, and check that out and buy something fun for the Easter baskets you're putting together. Kathleen Beckman, thank you so much. I have really enjoyed it. And I hope you come back again. I know you're local to Orange County.
Yes,
we're so blessed by that. Remember to go to her foundationforpriests.org site and learn how to pray for our priests. That's such an important component. And buy several of her books and
thank
be uplifted
you.
By that. Thanks. Thank you so much, Kathleen. Really enjoyed our conversation and meeting you for the first time.
Yes.
Hey, everybody. Tomorrow in the liturgy, you're going to hear about the story of how Moses received the 2 stone tablets with all the 10 commandments on them written by our Lord. And I thought it would be fun to go into a classroom of young third graders and ask them what they thought might be the hardest commandment to follow in their lives right now. And here's what they had to say.
Call Me Catholic. We're chatting with Catholics.
Yeah, so my question to these wonderful third graders today here at St. Joachim Elementary School is,
out of all the Ten Commandments right now, what's the one that's giving you the most trouble?
Sleeping on Sunday, taking rest on Sunday.
Probably not using God's name in vain, because sometimes you get scared, sad, or mad that, like, the word just slips out without you not knowing.
Yeah, and so that's a really good habit to be aware of. What commandment is that one?
Thou shalt you use God's name in vain.
That's right. So that also means, you know, sometimes we just use the word God without actually talking to God. We just use it as an expression.
To, like, be better with my mom and dad.
So that is the fourth commandment, to honor your mother and your father. Is that tough for you?
A little bit. Like, sometimes I take out my anger on them when I'm, like, really sad at my brother or something like that.
Very good. Okay, well, that's very mature of you to be aware of that. That will serve you well, too.
One commandment that's hard for me is sometimes my brother gets something really good and I kind of want it. So, number 10, the 10th commandment's one of the hardest for me because he gets some of the stuff that I like, which makes it hard for me to, like, kind of not want it.
So in that commandment, God says don't covet your neighbor's goods. What do you think the word covet means?
Like want?
Well, yeah, not only want, but not want them to have it. So it's like, okay, my brother got a new soccer ball, and it's not just that I want that soccer ball. I don't want him to even have it.
Yeah, sometimes that happens too for me.
Okay, well, good luck with that. Sounds like you're a very earnest young man.
I think you shall not steal is one hard for me because I have an older sister and she gets a phone.
You got to wait for that. Well, sometimes you swap clothes. Maybe you can share.
Yeah, but she hogs it.
Okay, well, then that's just something you're going to have to work with.
Yep.
But we love our sisters, don't we?
Yeah.
Once more with feeling.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I think, like, the hardest commandment is, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain.
Hmm?
But, like, let's say I'm not saying God's name, but I'm saying bad words. Does that still count?
I think in this specific commandment, God is saying he does not want us to ever use his name casually or loosely or to condemn someone or to express something other than a prayer. The other bad words that creep into our language are really bad habits, and they can sometimes lead us to misusing God's name as casually as we use the other kind of words. But you look like a gentleman, so I'm glad you're aware of it, okay?
I think that being mean to my parents is the hardest because sometimes I don't want to do something and they tell me to do it and I get in trouble, and it just makes it harder for me to do that commandment because I'm a little kid right now and...
Well, you're talking like a big grown-up, though. You're talking quite maturely.
I'm little right now and I need to learn how to mature myself by acting like this to my parents. So I think it's very hard for me to obey my parents sometimes.
Yeah, you don't always understand why they have some of the rules they have, but it's always because they love you and they want the best for you. And God is the same way. When you disrespect them, it's like you want to talk back to them or give them a little sass.
Yes.
Yes, but we're going to keep that fourth commandment in mind next time we have that temptation, right?
Yes.
We love them.
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
Remember the Sabbath day is kind of hard for me because I usually have, like, sports on the weekends. Well, yeah, they usually have games on Sunday and Saturday.
But you still make time to get to Mass?
Yeah.
Well, that's the priority, I think, that God is establishing, to spend some time honoring him, coming to Mass and with your family.
Yeah, like if my games are at 10 in the morning, then we'll finish and then go to, like, the 12 o'clock Mass.
Yeah. So you work at it, but it sounds like you've got a good formula for it. All right. Well, God bless you and good luck with your team.
The resting on Sunday is hard for me because I usually have soccer or something on Sunday. And I really like to play on the weekends because you don't really get to play on the weekdays because of school.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to do that.
Well, as long as it doesn't interfere with your getting to Mass on Sunday or even Saturday night, I think God is all for the recreational aspect of Sunday.
Yeah.
Good luck with your soccer. So, Mrs. Woodworth, you are the teacher in this bright young third grade classroom. What are some of the commandments you struggle with?
I think one of the hardest ones is the 10th commandment about coveting what other people have. As hard as it is for young children to not want from others. As adults, we have the same struggles. Yeah. We see the cars, we see the houses, we see jewelry, all of the materialistic things, and we have to take a step back and just realize that everything that we have because God has blessed us with it, mm-hmm. and we need to be thankful for that.
Yeah. So I have a question here. How many of you know what it means to bear false witness against your neighbor? That's the eighth commandment.
Maybe don't want what your neighbor has or something like that.
No, that's more covered in the ninth commandment, which is to covet their goods.
Maybe like, don't be jealous of someone?
It's even different than that. Have you ever heard someone tell a lie about somebody else? Yeah, and it's mean and it's gossipy. Has that ever struggled with you where you feel like you want to jump in there and get into some of the bad talk about people? No, you're all too saintly. Okay, good. I'm glad to see that.
I had a little audience of saints there, and I was trying to pull out the bad stuff.
It was pure. They were probably just looking at each other like pure silence.
So it's cute. The things that are the biggest struggles for them are the Sabbath, which I thought that was kind of interesting, getting to church on Sunday, right. Which speaks to their crowded little schedules.
Exactly.
You know, third graders have to be in a million different places.
Exactly.
And I tried to point out to them that if you take a bulletin, you'll see that there are masses throughout the day on Saturday evening and Sunday morning.
Well, I was going to say, Mom and Dad, you hear that.
Yeah.
If our little ones are struggling with that, well, Mom and Dad, you know, you need to hear that.
And then taking the Lord's name in vain. I like that little boy's wanting to clarify if it's a bad word and it doesn't use God's name in vain. Is that okay? Well, just the fact that he was discerning that tells
Precisely.
Me he's on the right track.
Precisely.
Hey, next show coming up is Barbara McGuigan with 2 hours of The Good Fight. Always excellent pro-life conversation. Do check out our Facebook page. In addition to watching us live during the show, you can watch a recap of the show because that will keep streaming. You can check out some of our comments, podcasts, and links and all that kind of stuff. Hey, mostly we want you to join us again next week, same day, same time, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I am Peggy Norman, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.